Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
It's time to wake to sleep with Sleep Science Today, where we learn to sleep well with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio.
All right. Welcome to another episode of Sleep Science Today. My name is Andrew Kolsky. I'm your host of the show. Today, we're going to be talking about wearables, nearables, and airables. And our guest is Dr. Peter Ostro. He works at South Shore Medical Center. He is an assistant professor of medicine at Tufts School of Medicine. And he has been working in the area of sleep medicine for over 30 years. So welcome, Dr. Ostro.
Thank you for inviting me.
We're glad to have you, because this whole concept of wearables and nearables and sleep measuring is something relatively new. And we'd love to hear from you about what is it and why do we have it all of a sudden?
Okay. So, one of the questions people ask is, why does this exist? Why does consumer sleep technology exist? I once had a colleague say to me that everybody sleeps and everyone has a problem with sleep. Mm-hmm. That's probably not exactly true. Yes, everybody sleeps and everyone wants to sleep better. So that's where this sort of comes about, is that people have realized that sleep is important to their health. And they want to have some sort of intervention as to how they could do this. And they'd like to see it over just not one night, but over multiple nights that they do it. And they want to personalize it. They want to make it for them. I mean, you and I have different sleep habits. We have different sleep needs. And other people are the same way. So it's a whole concept of personalized medicine that's going on. Mm-hmm. The other part of it is that this whole field of consumer sleep technology is only 10 years old. Sleep is only maybe 60 years old itself. Sleep mm-hmm. medicine is a science. But why were we able to have this happen all of a sudden? A lot of it is just the technological advances. I mean, think about it. When, before we were kids, actually when we were kids, just computers were these big rooms of multiple machines. And now I have a computer on my watch.
Right.
So it's miniaturized so that the technology that once took rooms of technology now is actually very miniaturized. The other thing is just things that we can do to measure it, everything from, how we record sleep in terms of, electrophysiology. But now, you have things that you can have the what we call light and pressure that'll tell us about our sleep at home. Mm-hmm. I remember oximetry, the thing on your finger that measured your oxygen and your pulse. That used to cost like $2,000. Now it's like $30. And it's made with light. I mean, it's called photoplethysmography, mm-hmm. and it measures the density of light. And that could be done right in your bedroom now, is you can measure your own oxygen there. And the third part is really what people are scared of. It's called artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
And artificial intelligence is having these machines think like humans. And it gets deeper when you look at machine learning or deep learning, and now, of course, generative AI, is that artificial intelligence allows us to have formulas for this so that people are really sort of have this available at this point. And now we can have technology at home.
Right.
I think our patients come in and they ask about sleep now. They ask their general practitioners, their internal medicine, their family practitioners who, what's going on? I don't sleep well. I can't fall asleep, but I can't stay asleep. So they're all interested in what's going on with sleep medicine at this point, or is their sleep specifically.
Mm-hmm. But I find it interesting that I would think that if somebody starts off saying I'm having trouble with sleep, that they would probably want to go to a doctor, and they'd probably be looking for some sort of a medical intervention, a pill or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. So how did that turn into measuring my sleep with a computer? Why did that even matter to them? They'll say, I'm assuming, well, I know I'm not getting good sleep. That's why I came here. So what's the interest in measuring things, and what does it even measure?
I think that people wanted more information than just, I don't sleep well. I mean, they think, well, hey, do I actually sleep? And sometimes we talk to people and say, you know, you actually maybe, you think you're awake, but you're actually maybe in light sleep. Mm-hmm. And there are different stages of sleep, and they all want to know, am I getting, you know, good sleep with dreaming, deep sleep? So there's that whole issue. And the first part of it, of course, is, and I'm not going to get into this, but talking about sleep hygiene, you know, sleeping, you know, getting to bed at a regular time, you know, relaxing before you go to bed, being in a room that environmentally is good for that. So a lot of it came about to say, okay, there are things that we all can explain that we actually all intrinsically know what's going on. But I think there's a group of people, and I'm not saying this is everybody who comes in, who really want to know what the measure is. They actually are interested in, you know, how long do I actually sleep? Do I sleep in one position? Do I have enough deep sleep? You know, those are things that people want to know, and the technology helps them answer those questions. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, it's, you know, some people are going to want more knowledge than others. Some people will just want, as you say, a pill. You know, some people want more of that. Some people don't want the pill. They want to learn how they can do it without, you know, an external intervention.
Right. Right. It seems to me, though, that, you know, you can get to a point where you're measuring so many things that it can cause a tremendous amount of anxiety, because now you're looking at things that you didn't normally have the ability to see.
Yeah. And, you know, people sometimes actually focus so much on sleep that when they get this technology, they become obsessed with it. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I come in, you know, and a patient says, well, I'm not getting enough deep sleep. It says here right on my watch, I'm not getting enough. And, you know, we have to sort of talk to them. They begin to get more obsessed. A lot of this occurred around sort of athletics. You know, the athletes want to have optimal performance. So they learn about diet, and they learn about training, and they learn about their exercise, but they also learn that, hey, sleep is also important. So they begin to fixate on that. And there's actually some research that's showing that sometimes you focus a little bit too much on sleep to the point where you're actually getting poor sleep because you're too obsessed with getting good sleep.
Right.
And I'll just say one other thing is that sleep duration doesn't equal sleep health. Mm-hmm. You know, it isn't just the number of hours you fall asleep. I mean, it's the regularity, it's the continuity of how long do you stay asleep without either waking up or arousing, your quality of sleep, you know, how deep versus light sleep, you know, whether you feel like you're falling asleep at appropriate times. Here's old circadian rhythms, you know, when you fall asleep, when you wake up, that there's a lot to it. It isn't just the number of hours you sleep. And that's mm-hmm. where people may get a little too obsessed about the actual number itself.
Yeah. So, you know, because there's so many factors related to someone's sleep, I would assume that these devices can be good in some areas and maybe not so good, or maybe not even look at other areas. And I'm curious, do you know the history going back to sort of the beginning of the development of these wearables and other devices for people? You said, you know, you had people who were sports people who wanted to measure things. Is that where it started, or where did this even start?
Well, I think as we point out that people, everyone sleeps and everyone thinks they have a problem with sleep. So, you know, that's part of it. And that's everyone. Mm-hmm. I think the technology, the consumer sleep technology began on people who really were getting more and more focused on that. And as I said, because of our technological advances, we were able to meet a need. So there was a need. I mean, there were people who wanted to, whether they were athletes or just consumers who just wanted that. And the industry realized there's an opportunity here as the technology was improving to be able to go ahead and put this together. So it was sort of, it was a need and a demand and therefore a supply that could be there that was they could develop it. And, you know, this is, as I said, is only about 10 years old at this point. And so there's been an evolution in the technology. And they get better and better. And there's more and more things, as we will say, is there are more and more devices we have available to people to actually monitor the their sleep. You know, and hopefully the cost will continue to come down. I mean, this is another issue is that this is a technology that you have to buy. It's not going to be covered by insurance. It may not be covered by your health savings account. You know, so it may be something that you have to consider getting out of pocket for. And I think that's where, you know, the industry has to match that by developing technology that's more accessible to everyone in the population rather than just people who have the interest and the money to do it.
Right.
So there has to be that. And when I've given lectures on it, one of the things that I get asked about is, you know, is this a technology for just people who can afford it, or is this going to be a technology that's going to be available to everyone, you know, and not have a financial limitation? And I realize I have no control over that, but the fact is I hope industry sees there's, you know, clearly a market for everyone in this, who, that they would get benefit from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It gets people interested in sleep. I mean, I think that's, you know, think of us is that a lot of people are very macho about sleep. You know, I don't need any sleep. I need less sleep. A friend of mine just sent me an article from Smithsonian as to why some people can do with less sleep. Well, yes, up to a point that's correct. But we know that, you know, sleep isn't just rest. It aids our metabolism. It aids our mental status. It helps us emotionally. You know, there's all these factors that people don't talk about with it. And I think this is where people want to get better sleep.
Right, right. Well, you know, in a little later on in the show, I want to talk about the actual technology that's out there. But for right now, I am curious, since you've been in the field of sleep medicine for over 30 years, then I'm sure you must speak with colleagues in the area. And I'm curious, what type of conversations go on between sleep doctors about, you know, technology at all? Are some people anti and some people pro, or is there a general theme that people are embracing this? What's happening behind the scenes?
You ask a very interesting question about it because, you know, as you say, the technology is new and there are some people that are going to be resistant to it because it's not medical grade. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole discussion. There are large groups of us who are seeing the future is here. Mm-hmm. People want some control over their own health. And this is one way they get it is by gathering their own information. So I think there's been articles written about it, you know, looking statistically, and not all sleep physicians are really conscious of it. They don't really necessarily accept it. Some of them never ask about it. Sometimes if a patient asks, they don't necessarily listen. And I think it's important for us to understand that it's important to patients that they want this better health and that physicians who are involved in sleep medicine need to have at least some understanding of it. Understand that it's not necessarily going to have great accuracy, but it is in a way has some accuracy. It's better than just guessing.
Right. Right.
I think that's where we have to accept that there are going to be roles for consumer sleep technology. So we have to really sort of accept that it isn't a bad thing. people, if in our field people are interested in their sleep, you know, beyond whether they snore or not, then that's something that's going to be important here. And I think there's still, I think there's a mixed opinion. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's necessarily based, I mean, I'm an older sleep specialist, and yet I'm very much attuned to saying I'm interested in what's going on with this. Yeah. So it isn't just that young people who are tech savvy or young physicians who are tech savvy are going to be that way. I think it's a very mixed bag as to how you view what's going on here.
Yeah, that's, you know, you answered my next question there, because that was really interesting to me that, you know, I would think that the physicians that are just now getting into sleep medicine would probably be very pro-technology, and those who've been in it longer without having the technology wouldn't be, but that's not the case, it doesn't seem.
No, I think it's, you know, a mixed group. Obviously, someone who's interested has to have some interest in the emerging technologies that are existing. And there are emerging technologies within sleep medicine for ourselves that are here, and emerging ways in which we view our sleep studies. Mm-hmm. So the technology, not just the technology, but also, you know, the software that's involved.
Right.
On the other hand, there's a degree of skepticism. But I think that people are saying, okay, it's going to be here. Let's figure out what role it plays in the care of patients. Because
right.
ultimately, that's who we're here for, is the patients.
Yeah.
Helping them sleep better and feel better. And I think that's, you know, I think we all agree that sleep health is health. It's
right.
part of it.
Right. And we're learning so more and more about that. But this mm-hmm. is... This is a great spot for me to break. We'll take a commercial break real quick. We're talking with Dr. Peter Ostro about consumer sleep technology on Sleep Science Today. We'll be back in just a minute and get into some more details.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay. We are back on Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. Today, we're talking about sleep technology, consumer sleep technology, with Dr. Peter Ostro. And, you know, I'm curious to get into, when we say technology, we've used the word wearable and nearable and airable. What do those words mean, and what types of devices are out there?
Okay. I'll start with the definitions of each. So wearables is some item of technology within sleep now that has direct physical contact with the patient that they wear. Nearables are technologies that may be in some contact with the patient, but not directly with them. And airables is, and that's sort of a name that came up, is probably more the software that is applied as sleep tech, as medical technology or medical devices. So it's sort of like it's the software that serves as a medical technology rather than something that's physical. So wearables are probably the most popular for consumers to know about. So what are wearables? These are devices we wear. It could be on the fingertip. It could be a ring. It could be a watch. It could be on your arm. It could be a belt. It could even be on your head as a loop or even in your ears. And so, you know, I mean, the ones that people know about, A, is probably the wrist one. I mean, Fitbit was probably the first one that came out with it. But, you know, Apple Watch then developed, and Samsung and a few others, and the Whiting's Ring. And all these devices do measurements that may be helpful in looking at sleep. Same thing with the rings, like this is an Oura ring. There's a couple of newer rings coming out. There's the Belen ring that fits just on the tip of the finger. There's the Whoop device that fits on the arm. And there's even devices that fit on your head that actually, either on your head or ears, that actually try to measure the electroencephalogram, the EEG, in other words, your brain waves. Mm-hmm. So all of them are there. How are they? So how do they work?
Yeah.
So there's really a couple of different components. The first one is sort of an older component. We should talk actigraphy, but it's based on what's called accelerometry. It's called triaxial accelerometry, which is like your three dimensions, you know, left, right, up and down, you know, side to side. I mean, it's all the tilts, and it measures in three dimensions your movement. So it can tell you, are you moving or are you not moving? And the less movement is always felt to be related to deeper sleep. Mm-hmm. And then the other part, as I mentioned, was photoplethysmography, which measures the density of blood flow. And in doing so, it's sort of it measures your pulse. We used to say heart rate, but it's really pulse rate. I used to say even heart rate and variability, how the heart rate variables is really pulse rate variability. But what it is looking at these parameters that actually can tell you whether you sleep or not, for, you know, that you actually have in deeper sleep may have different blood flow that's going through here. And it may vary a lot on what your heart rate variability, that sort of rate between each beat going faster or slower, or having greater variability versus less variability. And we can, there are ways of looking at that. And the best way of putting it is, you know, so it does actually translate these sort of items into an algorithm, a formula with artificial intelligence that can produce a number. It can tell you whether you're sleeping or not. It may tell you which stage of sleep you're sleeping in. Some of the newer ones are starting to look at whether you might be having sleep disordered breathing, sleep apnea. Mm-hmm. And they also have sensors for skin temperature as well. So that may be part of that as well, that having a lower temperature when you're sleeping is what we're seeing and at what point that occurs. Right. And they're getting better and better. I mean, the technology, the sensors are getting better with this. But it really does give you a lot of different information that could be translated into telling you about your sleep.
Right.
And it could be any one of these. I mentioned there's the ones on the head and the ears that actually can measure your EEG, which is the electroencephalogram, which actually may tell you more about what stage of sleep you may be in. Huh. I'm not going to get into yet the validity of all this. We'll do that in the third part, but it will give you information about your sleep in terms of wearing it. Nearables. Nearables are devices that may be in your pillow or in your mattress or at your bedside that measure different aspects of it. And it does the same thing as the wearables do, but in sort of different. It may look at pressure. It may look at, again, it moves the accelerometry, your movement. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the light part of this, but it has other sensors that will do that and give you information. So some people have looked at, you know, different mats that sit underneath the sheets on your mattress that'll measure your movement and other factors, your body temperature. It may not tell you oxygen, it can't really do that, but it will look at other aspects. Mm-hmm. And so they are sensitive as well. They're a little less known for most people because they don't tend to buy those things. They tend to look at something that's easier to deal with. I mean, a mattress you want to put under, maybe you've got to arrange it. Maybe it's got a, maybe your pillow monitor has to be made in a way and may have some disruptions to sleep that you don't necessarily get by wearing these, the wearables.
Right.
And then the nearables are really, you know, the apps that we get on phones that can tell us either apps that are on here that aren't necessarily connected to your wearable, but can listen, say, for snoring or listen for your breathing pattern or translate that into, you know, what be maybe your what stage of sleep you're in at that point. Mm-hmm. So all of them do something slightly different.
Right.
We don't always know how they measure it. I mean, a lot of the algorithms are proprietary, so they don't share it with the FDA. And, of course, we don't see the actual graphics. But there's a certain degree of accuracy with them that occurs. Costs vary. You know, I can't say one thing. Even if you look at an Oura Ring, that could be $200 difference between it, or an Apple Watch, or an older Apple Watch, mm-hmm. you know, versus a newer Apple Watch, or different, you know, I don't know much about Fitbit's varieties, but there are a lot of different Fitbits out there.
Yes,
so
there
you
are.
Don't know which one is actually, you know, the cost is different, and maybe the measurements are slightly different, and the accuracy might be slightly different. So, but it's interesting, there's a lot of choices, and I can't sit here and recommend one versus another at this point. Maybe in the future we'll know a little better, you know, what's going to be available to people.
So, yeah, I mean, I find it really interesting but also confusing, the fact mm-hmm. that there's so many different ways that different devices are trying to measure things, and mm-hmm. you know, all of the work that has to go on in the background for someone to even figure out how are you going to measure sleep, mm-hmm. and then put that in a package that is cost, you know, a cost that a consumer can actually afford, because even now, you know, you look at an Apple Watch, for example, those are pretty expensive. They're not, you know, a $30 item. yeah. And it's and then from, you know, my knowledge, prior to this consumer technology, you had sleep clinics where you'd go in and you would get hooked up to a polysomnogram, or, you know, polysomnography, and actigraphy is another word you mentioned. Can you share a little bit more about that with us? What do doctors do, you know, in office different than what a consumer device might do?
Yeah, obviously there's, as opposed to technology, there's actually a human contact that we talk to the patients. And some of what we get, and I'm going to ask patients about this or that or something else, what's their sleep duration? You know, excuse me, you know, what's their onset of sleep? How long does it take them to fall asleep? Do they dream? I mean, so by history, we're going to get a lot of information that the watch or the ring or whatever or the bed is not going to know. So we have a starting point of a history of what people, you know, what people will talk about with their sleep. Mm-hmm. You know, and whether, of course, they're feeling tired during the day and has their concentration, and do they have other medical, and we know other medical problems that go on. And we get to a point, okay, we have to do some testing. And not to get into great detail, but there's obviously the in-lab polysomnography and the home sleep apnea test. The in-lab polysomnography is utilized a great deal for when we want to know a lot about sleep, in addition to, say, sleep apnea, which has sort of become the focal point of a lot of sleep medicine, is sleep apnea. Mm-hmm. But it will tell us how long it takes you to fall asleep in a lab setting, how your sleep is in a lab setting, and you know, and we can gather a lot of information. I think it's interesting that some sleep specialists get basically the number of this apnea hypopneic index, which is the number of episodes of sleep disordered breathing divided by the total amount of sleep. And there's a lot more information we can get from these studies in the lab. We use the in-lab study when it's a little more complex. Is there another type of sleep disorder, like people are acting out dreams, or they're sleepwalking, or they have a lot of restless legs, or if they have more difficult diseases, like they've got lung disease, or they've got heart disease, or they've got neurological disease, there's a reason to do it in the lab. The home sleep apnea test is really a sleep apnea test. It doesn't tell us much about sleep. So in some ways, it's even less, tells you less about sleep than the consumer sleep technology. It doesn't tell you anything about sleep, really.
Right.
And really just for screening for sleep apnea. Now, again, there are newer devices coming out, or not even that new. We talked about photoplethysmography and consumer devices. These devices also have what's called arterial tonometry, which is measuring the pressure in your finger. And that seems to correlate with sometimes sleep staging, and whether you have sleep apnea or not. So it actually tells you a little bit about sleep. Wow. And there are a couple of new devices. I mean, the one that's been out there, the WashPad, has been out there and approved by the FDA for a long time. Another one called Sleep Image, which just sort of fits on the finger here. And it measures oxygen and these other factors, and it does what's called cardiopulmonary coupling that can tell you more information. And this may be where things may head, is that you can now have a home study that might tell you a little bit about what's going on with sleep, which currently is the standard, is not anything about sleep.
Right.
So you know, that's what we're looking at with this. And even at home, there's data. What we have is data that we don't necessarily utilize in our discussions.
Right.
But it's interesting. So again, there's an emerging technology in home sleep studies that's going on that may permit us to know more about actual sleep in addition to whether you had sleep apnea or not.
Right. Well, let me stop us there for our next commercial break, and then I want to come back and get into some questions about, you know, the accuracy of some of these things, because I know I have a lot of questions.
Right.
So we will be back on Sleep Science Today after the break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
The station that makes you feel good.
All right. Welcome back to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We're talking with Dr. Peter Ostro about consumer technology and sleep. And so here's some questions that I have for you. And you mentioned a little bit of this earlier, but I'd really like to discuss it further. You have different companies. You've got Apple, you've got Fitbit, you've got Garmin, a lot of different companies making devices and things, as well as people making apps and all these things. How do we know what they're actually measuring and whether they're accurate? And are there things that they can't really measure? Because I know with my own practice, I run into some problems. I'll throw one out there just as a starter. You know, if someone might be napping during the day, or if they wake during the night and then go back to bed, seems to me it'd be very difficult for a device to know whether they just stopped moving and were sitting still reading something versus their eyes are closed and their brain is napping. Tell us, how do these things work, or do they work, and what are the pros and cons?
Let me say the pros for a little bit is that, one, it gets people interested in sleep, as we said earlier, which is good.
Right.
Two, that people want to know a little more information and intervene on what's going on. And three, this is sort of a big one, is that these consumer devices can give us a longitudinal view. In other words, we do a sleep study. It's one night. Maybe it's two nights, but it's really a night or two. That's your whole life is a night or two. The consumer sleep technology allows you to look at it night. And may be good in terms of getting an idea of someone, how they're doing relative to themselves. Mm-hmm. So in other words, you and I may have different things on our watch, but we're pretty consistent in who we are as an individual. So maybe it gives us more accurate information about a person, about us as precision medicine. The con, the first to start with is, what are they doing and do they work? We want to know accuracy. What's the accuracy of these devices? How valid is their information? And sort of we're looking more and more and saying, okay, maybe it's not validity we're looking at, maybe it's performance. Are they doing something we want it to do? The comparison is really sort of funny, is that when you think about, your device that you've got your sleep study here is mostly in your home, in your bed.
Right.
The comparison has been with the polysomnography in the lab, So you already got two differences there. The information we're getting is from an algorithm produced by AI, by an artificial intelligence. The sleep study in the lab is by a human who scored it. We can't see the data. We can't see the raw data on these consumer devices. We can see the raw data on the studies in the lab. I mean, just thinking in terms of we're talking about time in bed. Time in bed, we know in the lab. You can see it when they get into bed, when they get in bed.
Right.
Time in bed on the home study, depends upon what the computer or the chip is saying about it. So there's a lot of sort of stuff that goes into that, looking at it. Having read a lot of studies about accuracy, mm-hmm. I can tell you, for starter, that they are pretty accurate in sensitivity. If you're asleep, you're asleep. It mm-hmm. tells you right, you're asleep. The specificity is the problem, is that if you're awake and staring up at the ceiling, it still may say you're asleep if you're not moving around.
Right.
And if you're breathing the same. So it overscores maybe the sleep efficiency that we're looking at. It may overscore the actual, in other words, the duration of sleep. It may not tell us a lot about how much wake time there is after sleep onset, which is uh-huh. a figure that we look at. Uh-huh. In terms of the sleep staging, again, you know what you're looking at a polysomnography. We don't see the graphics in the sleep, so we don't know. Is it right? I mean, is pulse rate variability a really good measure of it? We think it is because we can see it is, but is it totally accurate or is it partially accurate? And then finally, you get this thing called the sleep score on a lot of these programs. Have you seen that? Oh, I got a 98 last night. Oh, I got a 75. I'm not so good. Oh, I only got a 60. That's really bad. Well, where does that come from? We have no idea. Again, it's AI has generated this idea for you. So it's sort of the technology helps. The other part of this is that, and we're even seeing this now, like we all know there's been a discussion about oximetry and accuracy in people who have darker skin, mm-hmm. that it may be overestimating oximetry, say, and African-Americans. You know, that these new, the old-fashioned oximetry may not work. Well, how does that work in patients now? I mean, you see the stuff that's given for all consumers, but it's does it take into account who it's doing it for? You know, age group, you know, someone who's younger versus someone my age, people who may be obese or not obese, skin tone, comorbidities. These all may have effects in how consumer sleep technology may produce these numbers, and we just don't know because they're not doing it. You know, they're not necessarily giving this. And they really are, you know, been designated as more for entertainment and sports.
Right.
And I briefly, I'm not going to bore you with this, is about the FDA.
Yes.
So the FDA has regulations. And I have, you know, I have patients come, oh, the FDA approved my watch for use for sleep. Not really. There's every company that makes devices, every device is made is registered by the FDA. Registered. So it's everybody. Cleared. That's the one that you're getting from sleep technology. It's called a 510K designation. And it means that for either low or moderate risk, it's safe. It has an intended purpose that's supposed to give you information that may suggest issues, but not necessarily diagnose issues. And it is not has not gone through clinical trials to prove its effectiveness. So say, you know, the Apple Watch or the people who came to me with the Whiting's watch and said, okay, it's been approved by the FDA. No, it's just cleared by the FDA. To get approval, it has to have rigorous testing. It has to be, it can be of higher risk, but it has to be safe. That's the starting point. And the second thing is that it's had clinical trials through, you know, and it had, you know, institutional review board of, you know, for human trials that this has been tried and it's passed through that. And that's where it gets approval. And that's the basic. So medical devices get approval, consumer devices get cleared. And that's where I think people have to understand is that when they hear it's been cleared, it doesn't necessarily mean it's an accurate medical device, but it is approved for its intended use to look at your sleep and maybe make suggestions about it as to how it may work out better. And I think that's, you know, so I'm just trying to sort of fit the guidelines so that when people say, come to me and say, oh, the FDA has approved this. No, they cleared it. They didn't approve it. Some things have been approved. For instance, for the Apple Watch, the atrial fibrillation monitor on it has FDA approval. So that's fine. There's a new Samsung watch that has been approved for screening for sleep apnea, not diagnosing, but in people who don't have the diagnosis, screening them. There are, you know, other devices that get approved for one thing, but not for another thing. So like the Apple Watch is approved for atrial fibrillation, but not for sleep. So, you know, you have to know where an exact device has and what approval it has for what.
Right.
So the main thing here is it gives you information that you can work with. I think it's major advance other than people having interest in sleep is it could be used longitudinally. I think, you know, as opposed to what we have. So you have a diagnosis of insomnia, you do this, you do an intervention, and you can see your person to person, you to you, whether you've gotten improvement with it. So you can get an improvement of your sleep health. Again, right. Not just duration, but all the aspects of it. So it can actually sort of measure it. And it does it night to night. So you can look over, okay, how was I in the last week? How was I in the last 30 days? You know, so I think that's where its real advantage is. Maybe even in our patients who have sleep apnea, who we test and put them on CPAP, it can tell us whether they're sleeping better. Because the machine doesn't tell us about their sleep, just tells us about events. But this is a way of saying, okay, your Apple Watch says you did this, this, and this, and now we treated you, and are you getting better sleep according to your Apple Watch? So comparatively, within the thing, it doesn't matter whether it's totally valid, but it's totally valid for Andrew or totally valid for Peter.
Right.
And that's where the validity in performance helps. And I think that's its big advantage is it can help individual people, you know, their own personalized medicine.
Right. Wow. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time for today, but it is interesting to see the speed at which technology continues to improve. And like you said earlier, get smaller and less expensive and easier access for people. So, but these are all important things to think about and to know about when you're looking at consumer sleep technology. So Dr. Peter Ostro, thank you so much for joining us and sharing all this information.
And thank you for inviting me, and I've enjoyed talking about it. I really find it an interesting subject, I think, for now and the future.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Sleep Science Today and learning how to sleep better with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio. For more information on how you can achieve better sleep, go to sleepsciencetoday.com. Remember, sleep science today and sleep better tonight.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.